You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Joe Applebaum, Potomac Companies, John Yetman, Association for Enterprise Growth, Alec Bartholomew, People Stretch Solutions, Gail Chambers, Holmes, Larry Horn, Johnson, Nick Gurig, Redmond, Peyton and Braswell, and Sharon Riccardi, FEC Bank. And our lineup of guests today includes Chris Krebs, President of Novus Building Services, followed by Dorothy Kaczynski, Director and CEO of the Phillips Collection, Bob Sprague, President and CEO of Yes and Michael Nigel, who is the CEO of Act One. And let's get to know our first guest, Chris Krebs, President of Novus Building Services. Chris, what is Novus Building Services?
We're a multifamily residential interior non-structural unit renovation company.
How large or how small is the team?
About 42 employees.
Uh-huh. And how'd you get a job with this company?
I founded the company in 2011.
Uh-huh. How old were you when you started this business?
32.
Uh-huh. And where'd you grow up?
The Deep South, six different states.
You moved a whole mess of times as a kid, huh?
I did.
Uh-huh. Alex?
Chris, how did you integrate into school and the neighborhood, moving so much?
The first thing we did was sports, and then it moved on to there to school.
So what sports you play?
Soccer, football, and baseball.
What was your favorite?
Favorite is soccer.
Okay, what'd you like about it so much?
I liked the team atmosphere. I liked being able to see the field and be able to make moves before the opponent did.
Okay, and playing soccer and your love of it, how does that impact your business today?
Organically, we have to develop the team over time. In the essence, nothing can happen or nothing does happen dramatically. So it helps in the team building aspect.
Okay, so you got to build the team. Now, thinking back, what impact did your dad have on you?
Well, dad was gone a lot. He's stoic, Air Force pilot, F-16. He forced me into perfection, and I say that with all due respect, that was a lifestyle.
How did he do that?
Well, he was gone a lot.
Wasn't there something about a film? Wasn't there a film you guys watched together? What was that about?
In Phoenix, Arizona, we played for the state championship, and I missed a penalty kick that cost us the series.
Well, how do you know that?
We watched film on it after the game.
Oh, your dad had you review the film.
Yes.
How'd that make you feel?
I set my expectation that we can down to the last detail, we can practice and get better.
Mm-hmm. Gail?
So how old were you when you first started making money?
Eighth grade.
And what did you do? What was your first venture?
Mowing lawns.
And did someone do it with you?
My older brother came with me, yes.
So you convinced your older brother to join this business venture with you. How has that helped you with team building and with your company today?
Well, I think I'm one of the youngest members of our team, especially mid-level to executive staff, and it helps me understand and listen to people with experiences and then help guide the decision making.
You're a natural team builder. You managed to suck your older brother into mowing lawns with you, and you're the youngest. You're one of the youngest members of your executive team. It's interesting that you're comfortable working with older folks. Sharon?
Between you and your brother, who influenced too? Did you have more influence from your dad, and did he have more influence from your mom, or where did the personalities come from?
I believe my brother influenced me more than I influenced him. I learned from him. I learned from my father. I learned to listen from my mother.
You learned to listen?
I did. Mm-hmm. Mom's compassionate, yet extremely disciplined.
What do you bring from mom to work every day?
Ultimate discipline. Mm-hmm. She used to make the house back up every night after we went to bed, so we started from exactly the same point every morning.
Uh-huh. How's that influencing you nowadays?
Culture of discipline. We're running it through the company and constant iteration.
Uh-huh. And what do you bring from dad to work every day?
The never-fail attitude and attention to absolute detail.
Uh-huh. Nick?
You mentioned in the green room that you kind of create the storm and are restless. Is that a characteristic that you still have today?
Absolutely. It's hard for me to sit still.
And how does that impact, you know, your complacency with the size of your business?
Well, as my bandwidth is opening up because I'm getting the right team members, or we're getting the right team members on, it's letting me explore ways to make the company better, the culture better.
John?
Chris, you said after college you went to work on Wall Street. How did that affect you?
I had an internship with Robertson Stevens, and then I actually sold for John Hancock. And it's just like the movies, 220 cold calls a day. It taught me how to accept no.
Mm-hmm. Who's got the next question?
Go back to your brother. You didn't get a chance to share his influence on you. Can you be specific about what you learned from him?
Yeah, what he did to you.
Well, I was lucky enough to practice with all of his teams growing up, and he was not easy on me.
How'd that make you feel?
Yeah, you played with your brother's teams. They were older. How young were you when you were playing with the older teams? How much older were they?
I'm 21 months younger.
So when you were a kid, that was a pretty significant difference.
It was.
And what sport were you playing with them?
Soccer, baseball, and backyard football. We weren't allowed to play.
How were you able to keep up with them?
I had to learn quickly, and it was painful.
What are you talking about?
Skill set, being able to react in a situation to people that are quicker than me.
You get beat up?
All the time.
How'd that make you feel? Or what'd you learn from getting beat up that helps you build the business?
Endurance.
Is there really a connection there? Am I putting words in your mouth?
There is a connection.
Of what? Give me that again.
I've failed many, many times in business.
Wait a minute. Should you be admitting that on the air, though? I mean, there's a lot of people listening to this. Do you really want to talk about that?
Absolutely.
Why?
Failure is a cornerstone of perceived success.
What are you talking about? I thought, you know, you're a successful entrepreneur. This company's 42. What are you talking about?
This has been organic, just like building a team. It has not been dramatic. We've been through iterations, and it's been culturally, financially painful. Wonderful at the same time.
So you're telling me that you always haven't made a ton of money. There were some bad times there?
There are some bad times and some poor decisions that lead to change.
Should you be admitting that on the air? I mean, I read about CEOs on the, you know, and they're like, you know, you never hear good things about CEOs. You don't really hear about CEOs being vulnerable, though.
Vulnerability is a word that I just learned 9 months ago, but I'm recognizing it now that I need help to grow this company.
Really?
Absolutely.
What caused 9 months ago for you to become aware of it?
Some personal situations. And then some cultural changes within the company.
Maybe you want to talk about the cultural change that's bothered you the most?
Absolutely. I ran the company with an iron fist, more ebbed and flowed according to my emotion rather than a zero or one in discipline.
So who did you learn to run the company? Based on emotion, who taught you?
It was again just a learned behavior.
So you're learning as the organization grows from stage one to stage two. You've got a shift in terms of being a leader.
Correct.
What are you talking about there? What do you mean?
Well, me being the sole owner of all the entities, my personal life can infiltrate the company quickly, and I've learned to separate that. On a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kind of going back and watching that video of the missed penalty kick over and over again in respect to the way you handled the business before and now what you're going to do to change it?
Yes. I lost the attention to detail. Although we were successful on many levels, the detail was gone for a while.
Wasn't there something about football that you guys know each other for a long time?
So, Chris, you played football at Virginia Tech, athletic scholarship, and I was surprised to hear that you preferred soccer What is it about soccer that you liked?
Soccer to me is constant motion, and that flows into that storm that I've created. I don't like sitting still. I didn't like the timeouts. I didn't like the huddles. I like to be on the move. My mind doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm. You married or single?
I am divorced with two children.
I see. How old are the kids?
7 and 5.
Similarity between being a dad and being the president of Novus Building Services. What is it?
I cannot treat my children like employees.
What are you talking about?
Although I do listen to them.
Mm-hmm. What's the website address of Novus Building Services?
NovusBuild.com.
Let me have that one more time.
NovusBuild.com.
We've been speaking with Chris Krebs, president of Novus Building Services, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, it's executiveleadersradio.com. We'll be back in a moment right after this break.
All right.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Dorothy Kaczynski, who is the director and CEO of the Phillips Collection. Dorothy, what is the Phillips Collection? What are you guys doing?
We're a museum in Washington, D.C., private institution founded almost 100 years ago by Duncan Phillips. We're America's first museum of modern art.
Wow. And where are you from originally?
Yalesville, Connecticut, very rural part of Connecticut.
Uh-huh. How many brothers and sisters?
I had 3 older brothers.
So you're the youngest of 4. And what was going on with you 8 to 14 years old?
Going to school, doing a lot of chores on our 4 acres, picking bushels of tomatoes and plucking grubs from the cabbages.
Uh-huh. Gail?
So how did that lifestyle affect your work today or your role at the Phillips Collection today?
Attention to detail, patience, resilience, self-reliance, maybe perseverance.
Mm-hmm, a lot of stuff there. Sharon.
Yes, Dorothy said that in the green room that you were spending a lot of time in the garden with your dad. What about your mom? What's the relationships with your mom, dad? What is your...
Yeah, what was going on there?
Well, my dad was off working most of the time. Mom was at home tending to this complex, I think unusual rural environment. I actually think of myself rather being alone or with my next brother doing those chores on our own, kind mm-hmm. of contributing to the household.
Nick?
How did you, from that, you know, kind of growing up, doing the picking of the vegetables and all that, how did you get into the arts?
Probably the biggest influence comes from my oldest brother, older by almost 20 years, and his wife. He's an architect. She's a French professor. She was from Hungary originally, so there was this sense of new worlds, new dimensions.
Dorothy, you told us this great story about a trip that your oldest brother took.
Yeah, it was just after they got married, so we're talking in early 1960s, and they're off to live in France for a couple of years, and it was kind of this huge transformative experience of sort of waving them off when they got on this, you know, Flandria ocean liner to go to Paris.
But you kind of describe what sense did that have on you as you departed.
Doors opening to new worlds, new dimensions, living abroad, speaking other languages. I got from them at least monthly wonderful postcards, cathedrals, museums, villages, and anecdotes of their experiences. So there was this sense of, dramatic sense of worlds beyond those 4 acres where my early life was focused.
And what impact did that have on your development and decisions about where you wanted to go to college?
Well, that's, you know, so 2 of my older brothers went to Yale College, and there was this sense of when it was possible for a woman to go to Yale, well, sure, I'm going to do that too.
But I have to attribute. Were you not supposed to go to college?
I think there was some small question posed, maybe, you take it easy. But I mean, I was determined to have the same opportunities and the same.
Do I get a competitive thing going on with you?
Oh, I think so.
Where's that coming from?
Well, if you're the only girl and you're the youngest, there's the sense of, you know, a determination to have those opportunities, privileges, or challenges just as well.
All right.
So how do you go from picking vegetables? I mean, what was your avenue, your pathway to get from picking vegetables and your upbringing to the world beyond? How did you get there? Was that through education?
Yes. Well, we can quote my father: education, education, education. So, you know, he worked in restaurants. My parents didn't go to college, and there was this. He intoned the importance of that as a path forward.
And how far did you go in your education?
I have a PhD.
So all the way.
All the way.
You know. Why the arts?
Well, it goes back to those doors that were open to me to see the potential and the beauty of the arts. I do believe that arts and humanities are a basic public good. Education, arts, humanities. It opens doors for other people as well.
At what point did you develop that view? Looking back, in college, after college?
I think in college already, or maybe even in high school. I ended up being the editor-in-chief of the paper. I took that very seriously, and when I look back at some of my editorial work, I'm surprised they published some of these things monthly in the local.
Why were you surprised?
I espoused those views, that passion about the importance of education, arts, the social impact very clearly.
Wow. So you really had a vision for yourself as a young girl.
I guess I did.
Uh-huh. John?
Dorothy, you said in the green room that you had to make more with less. How does that translate to your role as CEO and director of the Phillips Collection?
Yeah, I think it took in very seriously those early lessons that I didn't understand then about preserving things and ecological soundness, no waste. And the Phillips Collection is a noble institution that's woefully underfunded, and it's my job to find those resources, but also to encourage my staff to be nimble and creative and not be burdened by a want of some resources.
Dorothy, does this feel like a job for you?
Oh, believe me. When people say, oh, you have the best job in the world, uh-huh. except on the days when it isn't.
It's a passion for you, though.
It is a passion. Uh-huh. I think you have to be passionate because a big, huge part of my job is fundraising, mm-hmm. of convincing people of what I know to be absolutely true and to be able to absorb people's no's.
And what do you know to be true? What are you convincing them of that you know to be true?
That a museum or a library or a school is fundamental to the wellness of our society.
Wow.
And that's a lot of pressure. If you look back early on from 8 to 14, when did you start developing the ability to manage the pressure?
I was a very serious student. That was almost a refuge for me in the sense that I think I grew up in a rather isolated way vis-a-vis friends or other activities. So I think, you know, I took refuge in books, and I built my life. I built a way of existing sort of with and despite the environment around me.
And how do you deal with the isolation of being a CEO for such a prestigious organization?
That's a really good question. So I made a big switch from a life as a curator in the States and in Europe over many decades. And I decided I wanted to run a shop. And the people said, well, how does it feel, this new role? And the thing that I said surprised me the most was that isolation.
What's the website address of the Phillips Collection?
It's phillipscollection.org.
Let me have that one more time.
phillipscollection.org.
We're speaking with Dorothy Kaczynski, who's the director and CEO of the Phillips Collection here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this break. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Bob Sprague, President and CEO of Yes And. Bob, what is Yes And?
Yes And is a performance-driven marketing agency.
What do you mean by that?
A couple of things for us. For one thing, the background that a lot of us share is in the performing arts, and we bring that sensibility, I think, to the marketing work we do. Secondly, the great trend in marketing now is the measurement of return on investment, so making sure that campaigns perform on the basis for their clients.
How large or how small is this organization?
We're about 70 right now.
Uh-huh. And how'd you get a job with this company?
I founded it in 1986.
You founded this business, uh-huh. And where you're from originally?
I was born in the District of Columbia and grew up in Bethesda.
And how many brothers and sisters?
I've got two younger brothers.
So you're the oldest of three, huh?
Yes, I am.
What was going on with you 8 to 14 years old? Was it sports? Was it making money? Was it what was going on with you?
It was all music. It was the heyday of the progressive rock band, and that's what we were doing. We were making bands and making music and writing our own stuff. And
when you say we, is this you and your family, you and friends? What's that look like?
My brother is an excellent and remains an excellent guitarist, and we had a lot of friends who were also into music.
Uh-huh. And what instrument did you play?
I was the keyboardist.
And what was your role in these bands? What was the common thread you had in these different bands?
I usually took the role of music director, which is somebody who sort of organizes what everything else is going on, does a lot of the writing, a lot of the arranging, a lot of the deciding who's going to do what.
Oh, so you were the CEO of the bands?
In a way.
Okay, but you were calling yourself the music director. But is that a fair personality trait, you know, that we're talking about, where you were helping organize everything and stuff?
Yes, I think that's always been something I've been interested in. There's a behind-the-scenes aspect to it when you're the keyboard player as opposed to the front man.
So you weren't the kind, you're not the kind of boss that yells at people and tells them to do this or get out of my band?
No, you have to do a lot of politics in a band where really people are equal partners, even if somebody's nominally in charge.
Uh-huh. What's that have to do with business?
I think a lot. I think anytime you're doing music, you are relating to an audience. You're trying to deliver the audience something that it wants. And in business, you have a million audiences. You have your customers and clients. You have the public. You have the media. You have your own employees. You have your business partners.
When you were playing in the band, did you really care what your audience thought?
Absolutely.
How'd you know what the audience thought?
You listen.
What's that have to do with developing a campaign for a client?
Everything.
What do you mean?
Well, if you're not listening very carefully to what your target audience
is. Wait a minute. Now I understand why you've grown to 70 people, because you want to measure the effect. That just the same thing you were doing when you were playing in a band, you wanted to watch the audience's reaction. That's what you're doing for your clients nowadays.
Very much so.
Sharon?
Bob, what did your mom and dad do? What did each one of them do?
My mom worked in the home, as they say these days, and my dad was a broadcaster.
And who was the biggest influence out of the two of them for you?
It would be hard to say. They both had tremendous influence. You know, my father was the professional. He was out there working and doing a high-pressure job, but my mother was organizing the complex industry that raising three kids, especially three boys, can be. And so I think they both had a profound effect on how I
do. You have this creative component in you. Where does that come from?
Both of them. My mother was an excellent pianist and singer, and always did it as an avocation. And my dad, actually, his original career was drama, and was an enthusiastic amateur musician as well.
But Bob, you said your dad was a broadcaster. In those years, what's the most important thing you took away from your dad being a broadcaster?
I think he had that same sensitivity to the audience. Even when you're behind a TV camera or a radio microphone, you have to know what effect you're having on people, even at a remote distance. And he also was insatiably curious. He always wanted to know more about you and more about what was going on so that he could report on it.
So when you talk about the audience, can you think back a time as you were growing up when you didn't connect with the audience? What impact did that have on you?
I think it was very telling. I think we all tend to assume we know what we want to say, and it can be humbling to realize that just because you want to say it doesn't mean someone else wants to listen.
And in the green room, we noticed you're very humble. How have you translated that humility that you learned into your business success?
Why, thank you. That's very nice. I think
that was from the very beginning, because he mentioned he was the keyboard player leading from behind. Did you say something like that earlier?
Yeah, you're definitely, when you're a keyboard player, you're kind of stuck, even though it was the day of the Keith Emersons and Rick Wakeman, and we had those people to look up to. But in general, you're stuck back behind a mound of equipment, and you're pulling the switches and making the things go a little bit, but it's more Nick? Orchestrating it from behind.
So Bob, you've mentioned a lot about the creative side, but you know, in your business and as CEO, I mean, you have this intellectual side. Who do you think you get that from?
Well, my mother was about the smartest person I've ever met.
Wait. Your mother was a homemaker.
My daughter.
Your mother was a homemaker. What are you talking about? The
smartest
person. I
have tremendous respect for people who make homes, and it's a
tell me more about that.
Multifaceted job.
What do you mean by that? Tell me more about
your
that.
You're scheduling. You're doing logistics. You're doing supply. You're doing economics. And you're trying to make all that work.
Now I see what you mean. I see. Your mother also was a masterful juggler, too, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Gail,
and she
what do you
ran
think?
The business from behind the
she
scenes.
Did. So. Not to like mention that when my youngest brother went to high school, she went back and taught herself COBOL programming and did that for the rest of her life.
Oh, my gosh. Your mom is evolving, too. Gail.
So it sounds like your parents were a strong influence on you, but was there someone else in your life, in your young life, that was an influence on you?
There was. My junior high school band director had a tremendous influence, and he was a first call trumpet player in Washington here, so he brought that professionalism, and when you were in his band, you showed up on time, you knew your music, you had your instrument ready to go, you didn't make mistakes. You were expected to perform at a very high level, and you heard about it if you didn't. So that taught me a lot about being accountable and being ready to go.
So is that how it's helped you today with learning about accountability, and how has that translated into your business?
I think so. It's preparation, it's rehearsal, it's practice, so that by the time your curtain goes up, you're ready to really deliver.
Mm-hmm. John?
Hey, Bob, so how did you transition from music into marketing?
It was pretty gradual, but the actual original purpose of the company was to do music for film and jingles. And we did a lot of that for, you know, even Subaru and McDonald's and things early on. And as time went on, found that a lot of the same skills translated to a variety of marketing activities.
What do you mean that translated to? What are we talking about, the translation there? What do you mean?
Well, again, as I've said, the music, the emphasis on listening well, and translating what you hear into something that delivers a message, gives people pleasure, is what marketing is really all about.
Sharon, what else are you thinking?
Well, what I hear you saying is that creative gene just is so strong that you just take it to the next level each time.
Can't help it. Got to do it different. Even if it worked last time, there's a lot of motivation to try something new and see what happens.
But also, it sounds like across high school and maybe college, there was building of your music career. Can you talk a little bit about how you advanced and the building aspect of your music career?
Well, I think when you talk about building a band and some of the work that I was doing, it was a lot about making stuff. I mean, I was really into music composition. That was my degree in school. And I'm sort of in my third career now, but I'm still building. In this case, I'm building an agency.
Now, as you were building, what was your biggest challenge in your first career?
I think music, which was my first career, is a very demanding pursuit where you don't get a lot of good feedback a lot of the time. You're often in a place where you're not getting that feedback from the audience, and I can't say I really got much out of traveling all the time and some of the other things that go along with music.
What impact did traveling all the time have on you?
Again, I didn't have the opportunity to do the building and the creation and the things that I like to do, it was doing the same thing night after night after night after night in a different venue. And I missed the bit of being able to sit back and really create something new and beautiful. And
so you like innovation. Your nature is to continue to innovate, to absolutely keep creating change. Yeah. You don't want to do the same thing over and over again. So I can understand why you enjoy sitting with clients and helping them figure out what's next.
That's right. I think it's part of being an artist, I think, is if you do the same thing that everybody else does, you don't attract any attention. Same thing in marketing. If you do the same thing that everybody else does, it doesn't work. So the ability to look at circumstances and come up with something that is different but still right.
How are you keeping things fresh as a CEO just to stay focused and not work on your fourth career?
Marketing is in the midst of a revolution. I can't tell you how much I've learned in the last year about digital marketing and analytics and behavioral science and the effect that that's having on the way marketing is done. So I'm learning myself, and I'm pushing everybody around me to say, you know, if you're in the same place you were a year ago, you're really...
What's the website address for the Yes And?
It is yesandagency.com, spelled out.
Let me have that one more time.
Yesandagency.com.
We've been speaking with Bob Sprague, President and CEO of Yes And, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Back in a moment, right after this break.
Great question.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Michael Nigel, who is the CEO of Act One. Michael, what is Act One? What are you guys doing?
Advanced Concepts and Technologies International is a total acquisition management, foreign military sales solutions, and cyber defense firm.
How large or how small is this team?
We're over 250 people.
And how'd you get a job with this company?
I founded the firm with a co-founder in 1998.
So you co-founded the firm. And did you move a lot when you were a kid?
I did. My dad was in the Air Force, so South Dakota, Colorado, Little Rock, Arkansas.
You, in the green room, you mentioned that you grew up with nothing, but it didn't feel to me like you were resentful or even that it bothered you, and maybe even that you didn't know. What was that all about?
Well, neither one of my parents were very well educated, but they got together at 19, got married. Mom probably finished high school later. Dad got a GED, and we had a big family. We had five kids, and every day was a party at the house. I mean, you got seven people living in one small house, one bathroom. It gets interesting. Logistics or something.
Wait, hold on. But didn't it bother you that you guys didn't have a lot of money and that you know other people had a nicer car?
Other people in our neighborhood didn't have a nicer car. We didn't think about that. We were focused on going to school, playing sports.
All right, hold on. It feels to me like you grew up feeling pretty safe.
Oh yeah.
You grew up feeling a lot of love.
Absolutely.
Okay. My question is, how does that love that you grew up with, not feeling you needed anything else, how's that helped you build and shape your business?
I think that my job is to help everybody else in the company to achieve what they're trying to achieve, as well as take care of our customers. We're problem solvers.
Or do you think you're the older brother or something to the company, like you were to your brother?
I'm everybody's older brother.
What do you mean?
Yeah, my job is to take care of them.
Alex?
So think back growing up. At what point did you start thinking that it was your job to take care of your siblings?
Probably when I got to be about 12 years old. I matured faster than everybody else around me. So I was the leader of sports teams. I was the leader in school. I was the leader that all my other kids looked up to.
Why was that such an emotional answer for you?
Because I don't know. We were struggling at the time.
Mm-hmm. Did you know you were struggling at the time?
Not really. A little bit. You know, maybe by the time you get to be 12.
But you just took on the responsibility.
Yeah, but it was natural. It had to be done. Mm-hmm. Other people you've talked to today also worked when they were young kids. You had to go out, do your job, raise some money,
so you don't
contribute to the family.
You don't expect anything from anybody, do you?
Oh, no.
But at 12, You mentioned the Green. Were you in Arkansas by then, and you actually started noticing how the other half lived?
We got to Little Rock, actually Conway, in about 1966, and I played on a junior high football team that was almost all African American, and we played both ways back then, and I was the only white kid on the starting team, and I was successful at that, and you come to the field and you bring what you've got.
Nick?
Do you think that these experiences, I mean, you're bouncing from place to place, you're always the new kid, and you're a captain of the team, and you don't look like everybody. I mean, how does that translate to how you deal with your employees?
You tend to be very empathetic with folks who came from a different background. We have a really interesting mix of people in the company, and they all work hard. They all have different challenges. It doesn't matter whether they're 20, 30, 40, 50, or 60. Perfect. Every family's got their challenges. Yep. It can be your neighbors.
Sharon?
Michael, this compassion that's coming out, where does it come from? Where is it? Where do you where do you attribute to that?
Yeah.
My mom and dad are both still alive, both doing fairly well. Mom ran the house just like Bob's mom did. Five kids, it's a lot of logistics. Every morning, Dad was up, gone early, dressed the same, worked for IBM for a while as a technician, blue suit, white
Michael,
tie.
Michael, are your parents aware of the success you've had?
Marginally.
What do you mean marginally?
They understand I have a good company. We do very well. They may or may not check the website and see how we're doing.
If they understood to the extent that you've been successful, how do you think they'd feel?
They're proud.
Why?
They should be.
They did it.
You did what? They did what? What do you mean? What was it that they did?
They raised five kids.
Mm-hmm. Gail?
So relationships and people and working with people, that seems very important to you, and it seems that you've learned a lot with the different environments that you lived in. How does that help you today?
The challenge is getting the best people you can get and then developing them to their best capability and getting them to work with each other. And I think if I've done every job in the company and still do some of them, including close the shop every night.
John?
Michael, who were your biggest influencers?
Mom and Dad early, and then Dr. Gene Bigler at Hendricks College was a Fulbright scholar and an international affairs guy. He was the one who our seven guys in class put together a paper and predicted that a voting behavior prediction. Excellent. And wrote a paper and helped me get a scholarship,
Michael,
to IU.
What is the website address for Act One?
ACT-I.com.
Let me have that one more time.
AlphaCharlieTango-I.com.
We would speak with Michael Nigel, who is the CEO of Act One here on Executive Leaders Radio. We've had the opportunity of speaking with Chris Krebs, President, Novus Building Services, Dorothy Kaczynski, Director and CEO of the Phillips Collection, Bob Sprague, President and CEO of Yes and again, most recently, Michael Nigel, who is the CEO of Act One. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, including Joe Applebaum, Potomac Companies, John Yetman, Association for Enterprise Growth, Alec Bartholomew, People Stretch Solutions, Gail Chambers, Holmes, Lowry, Horn, Johnson, Nick Urig, Redmond, Payton, and Braswell, Sharon Riccardi, FPC Bank, for giving me a hand structuring the questions, hopefully providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening, because without you, we wouldn't have a radio show. And don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com. That's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn a bit more about our executive leaders, we appreciate you joining us today, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Whoa.